Welcome, everybody. I'm Jared. He's DJ, and this is Number One Bullshit.
Hey, all you fight friends out there. We have a bit of a disclaimer. We had some technical issues with our mics that we didn't catch while recording this episode. But don't worry. We're still coming in hot with content. We got that fuego in the mic. Enjoy. Question for you. You hungry?
Am I hungry?
Are you hungry?
Yeah, I could eat. Okay. I could eat.
I don't know. I'm tired of having steak and chicken, right? You want some arm?
Some arm meat?
Dude.
What is going on?
What happened? You were winning.
Yeah, it was like shaping up to be a very good fight. It was entertaining.
The first round was awesome, dude. Flyweights.
Yeah, yes, yeah, exactly. And two undefeated skilled flyweights, like ton of fun. I initially thought that it was that he was stopping the action because the guy like very clearly grabbed the fence.
Yeah.
And he had warned him about it a couple times. And so
times.
I was like,
yeah.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Well, we're not going to actually deduct anything, but hey, this is a stern warning. This is a hard warning. Yeah. This is a very serious warning. But yeah, so I was like, oh, okay. But then he immediately, like, super stern face. And I was like, oh, that's not a fence grab. Like, what's he getting that, like, into it about? And then, yeah, when he finally showed the bite, because in the replays, you couldn't really see it, right? Yeah. Like, it was like you could see his head kind of in there, but you couldn't really see what was going on. And then, yeah, when he showed the arm, it was like, ew, what is that guy doing?
So, first of all, one of the comments of the night that I hated is, and you can tell Senko, like, it's one of those things where, like, you're trying to say something, but she was like, I think one of the elbows, she's like, he ate it like a sandwich, right? And then, and then for them to, like, play on that. But how weird was, like, to see this great fight? They both had that, they, you know, step in the elbow from
Lima,
and then you're winning, you're on top, and you just bite him. And the comment that they made, like, how did he bite that hard with a mouthpiece in?
Mm-hmm.
What a weird, and I totally agree, them announcing, you know, like, Dana White's cutting him. He just ruined his
immediately.
Whole career.
Yeah.
For what?
He's only, like, I think he's, like, 20 years old.
What was the frustration that you, I'm not giving him an excuse. I would love to hear his reasoning of, like, I bit down because I have no, I have no idea why he did that.
Did you see Dean Thomas? Who's hilarious. Called him Bite Mark Coleman.
Oh, that's hilarious. Holy shit.
Yeah, pretty good. And then freaking Lima went out and got a tattoo of the bite mark, like, immediately.
Like, I would have too. Cool. I mean, it's like, that's, that happens so rarely.
He got a bonus. He got bite of the night. They officially announced it as the bite of the night.
That's
bonus.
Hilarious,
yeah.
By the way. I mean, like, because it was a great fight. He's young, new, and it's just kind of like, hey, man, we got you. You know, like, this shit shouldn't be happening, and we want to make, like, Dana White did what the UFC did what they had to do. They announced that they're cutting this guy. We don't play that shit. Perfect. Yeah. That needed to be done. There's no question that he needs to be cut. And then to be like, bite of the night, it's like, okay, you know, like, we're having a good time. We understand what happened, but we got your back. It's just wild. Like, sometimes you look at things and you're like, well, if something would have happened and I didn't watch the fights and you would have texted me, dude, someone bit another guy, I wouldn't have believed you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's one of those things we talk about with MMA. You never, not like this, but, like, you never know what you're going to see. We've been watching the sport for, the first event I watched, granted it wasn't live, was the David versus Goliath tournament. Yeah. Like, that's how long, and I'd never seen this before. You know, you've seen people do some wild shit, but never seen somebody throw away their career biting a guy. One thing I did notice, though, afterwards, and they're announcing it, like, you can tell a lot by looking in someone's eyes. Severino has, like, the predator, like, wounded animal type eyes, you know, of that, like you back like a rabid dog into a corner, like, kind of killer type eyes. Looking at him after the fact, it was like, oh, like, this dude, he doesn't seem remorseful. Like, he just seems like, well, that's what needed to be done.
Well, and that's why I want to really know, because I'm looking at it like, does he know that what he did wasn't acceptable? And that's the part, because he was like, I didn't bite him. Of course, I'm going to say I didn't bite him either. I didn't bite him. Uh-uh, you did. You lied. But I don't want to know it to get on his side and give him an excuse. I want to know just to see his thinking, because, you know, it's the Paul Harris thing. He wants to hurt you. And it's like every time that he would hold on too long to a
heel hook,
yeah. Yeah. He would always have this kind of like fake feeling of like, what'd I do? But you're like, this is what you do. And we know that you're a piece of shit in that aspect, trying to hurt somebody. This guy was trying to hurt him, but I want to know, like, was he frustrated at the fence grabs, and he's like, he's getting caught up in the corner saying he's great. I don't know. It was just bizarre. But yeah. I mean, first round was awesome.
He should have gone with the Chappelle defense. I didn't know I couldn't do that.
I didn't know I couldn't do that. Yeah, I mean,
I did know.
Like I said, I'd like to know just to know what he says about it, but he doesn't get an excuse, and he's justifiably out of the UFC. And
yeah, I mean, throwing away his UFC future. Now, a guy who has a extraordinarily bright UFC future, Peyton Talbot.
Oh, my God.
Holy shit. That was impressive. He looked, first of all, he looked substantially bigger than Simon, like substantially larger.
Yeah.
Everything he touched him with looked like it hurt. Every single thing. I mean, Simon is as tough as they come, by the way. Like go out, man.
Yeah, it ends earlier.
Yeah, there's certain people, like their bodies, like their brain won't allow their body to shut off. You know, it's like, yeah, it was. He took a lot of punishment. What I was impressed with Talbot too, not only obviously he was hurting him with everything, but he was just walking through everything Simon threw at him. And we've seen Simon put guys out. We've seen him hurt people badly. You know, to go to the article I wrote on Fansided, we found out, you know, how he was going to rebound. That's tough now for Simon. That's two in a row, but he's been in there with fucking Christian Rodriguez, prospect to prospects. We're now finding out. And Peyton Talbot, who's another guy that seems like he's going to be a future, you know, top 10 type fighter.
Dude, it was, for me, like, my note is he just looks better everywhere, everything he does. And like how they're saying he's just like big brother to him, it is. It's like everything he tried to do. And there was a couple times with Simon, however you say that. They were saying it different last night.
Simon, yeah.
Yeah, Simon. Touching him, and I'm like, ooh, okay, you got to mind your P's and Q's. And it's just like he just shakes it off and keeps going. And he looks like he's having a good time. Very matter of fact. I thought he was going to be a little bit more explosive in his post-fight, just to kind of like.
Yeah.
And he was just real reserved. Mm-hmm.
He does have some pretty sweet post-fight dances, though.
Yeah, for sure. but Simon is tough, but this wasn't close. This wasn't a
no.
And it's so weird because, you know, like we have our fun weekly bets going, and I'm like jumping back and forth, and I'm like, God, you know, like Simon is no joke, and what did he learn from C-Rod? And then you're looking at it, you're like, you never know how this is gonna match up. And when the fight started, I was like, what the fuck, man? Like, this was super impressive. We were already impressed to see Talbot's next fight after his last fight. I'm ready to see his next 20 fights, dude.
Oh, yeah. They were kind of getting into him on the post-fight show about, like, you have to have a name ready. You have to call somebody out. Yeah. And it's like, I don't necessarily – I agree with it from the standpoint of, like, don't go and call out a top 15.
Yep.
But if you had a name of, like, Gaston Bolaños, let's go. You know, like – a guy who's outside of the top 15 where you think it would be a good matchup for you that you think can help your career. You know, I get that side of it, but also, like, please don't rush this kid. I know he's a little older. He's in his late 20s, but like, there's no reason to rush him. He has shown, I mean, just everything's been good. The question people had going into this fight was, you know, he starts slow. Not this time.
No,
you know, he would have got his first round finish if Simon wasn't just a zombie and could eat all that punishment.
The knee, dude. Come on, the knee doesn't put you out. You're a special guy.
No, it did catch the neck a little bit.
Sure, it doesn't matter because he didn't get finished off that sequence either. Right? It's like the knee lands. He just keeps going. In the second round, you know, like that first hit, you're like, okay, it's done. Like this kid is just too tough for his own good, but. I mean, Senko said it. She doesn't want to compare him to, like, O'Malley, but the problem is that if you bring him around O'Malley, we might have another special thing in the bantamweight division to like get to his levels on his levels. I understand that he's late 20s, but if you give him appropriate competition that doesn't expose him, dude, imagine this kid 2 years from now in the bantamweight division, top 15, those matchups. Come on, man.
Yeah, I mean, he's one down the road. You're gonna see him match up with like a Yanez. Like you're gonna see those types of fights, and it's gonna be very entertaining. I think the skill set he presents is very, very impactful ground and pound. We talk about fight changing power. Like even though he couldn't put Simon out cold.
Yeah.
After the first hit, you saw that like, oh, this is just different. Like, Simon had to approach it different after that first time that he really got touched. And, you know, credit to him for being tough, but we always talk about it. It's never a good thing after a fight, unless it's, you know, Makhachev in the knee bar. Yes, I did just say knee bar. you never want to talk about somebody's toughness after a fight because it means they were getting their ass kicked. But what Peyton Talbot did last night, my note was he's special. I mean, he is a special fighter. Now, you can screw special fighters up by mismatching them and thinking you need to rush them along. Like, even though number of fight-wise, he's kind of similar to Marcus McGee, like, he doesn't need to fight somebody like that yet. He doesn't need those types of fights. He needs established... You know, give him a guy who might have 15 professional fights now, who's like a 12-3, 10-5, just somebody that's been in the game a little longer, but not some crazy 30 fight vet or some other like young killer. Like you guys have something here. Let's build that. Let's develop it. Cause otherwise you end up in a situation like where you're at flyweight right now, where you haven't been bringing people along in stages. And you're having to rush to get people into championship matchups because you haven't tiered it out like they did with women's flyweight.
Absolutely. And to even be even more kind of giving him his props, Simon looked noticeably more lost than he did against the loss for C-Rod. And it's like, is it a confidence thing where he just goes in and he's like, you know, I lost my last fight. I need a win. It's on your brain. Just super impressed by this kid, man. Like, yep. And he's just stone cold, you know, like he just, even when he got hit, he shook it off, laughed and stuff. You're like, you're he's one of those people that, you know, like shark eyes, you know, where it's like, I'm a killer. So fun. Can't wait to see who he matches up with next. I'm on the same page as you. Bring him on slowly because this is the bantamweight division. And let's say he does match up with someone in the top 15 and just gets that dub.
Yeah.
It's like, this is the bantamweights. This is not easy going forward.
Yeah, and people want to compare him to O'Malley. And I'm not talking from a skill set, standpoint, but from a demeanor, personality standpoint, I actually think he's kind of a lot like Max Holloway.
Sure. And the only
where he's that like laid back, very confident in his skills. Doesn't feel the need to like talk down to people, talk shit to people, but is supremely confident and is like breaking people down. And you can tell is having fun in there. Like that's special when people do that.
Yeah. And I agree. I don't compare him to O'Malley's personality. I compare him to that feeling when you're like, oh dude, O'Malley's special. Right. And that's what it feels like. And I think the comparison just goes because of contender series type shit, but there's something about him that you're like, it's going to be hard to forget his fights. You know, his next fight, we're doing research the week. We're going to be like, oh, yeah, I remember this very, very vividly. And he just has that special thing about him. Yeah, just ready for his next fight. And for Simon, I mean, yeah, that's two in a row. Not great when you're in that position. But there's something special about him, too. He just met someone that was on a different level.
Yeah, like let's bring it back a little bit. Yeah. Let's, you know, rein it in. He's still only 23 years old. Don't put him in there against other killers. You know, maybe put him in there. I like the idea of a contender series type matchup, which this was, but just unfortunately Talbot is a seems like he's a very special guy.
Yeah.
But when it came to, I mean, like, he was competitive in the C-Rod fight.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, and C-Rod just showed he's a hell of a fighter. So I hope that this doesn't rein in the confidence or, like, you know, have long-term effects on Simon's career, because I think there's still, this could be one of those things where we're looking back and all of a sudden Simon is 20-2,
yeah.
You know, and this was like a turning point type fight.
But like you said, ran it back some, let him build up his confidence in someone that's on his level or a little bit beneath, where somewhere like you should be able to win this fight. Let's see where your head's at. And then go from there. But I mean, yeah, Talbot, man. Hopefully he gets in there soon, dude.
Yeah. A guy who rebounded, right? You know, we're talking about Simon being able to come back from this. Yusef Zalal, like, what a performance. There wasn't like a second of that fight that he was not in control. And that's a guy who got cut from the UFC prior, you know, is out of that Factory X camp. And you hear all of the Factory X guys just talk about, like, oh, once he gets back in the UFC, like, it's off to the races. He's the dude. You know, once he can show, like, what he does in the gym on a big stage, and out of the UFC, 3 first-round finishes, comes back, and first guy ever to submit Billy Q. Like, that is special.
And his energy after, he was so – he sounded like McGregor. I know he was trying to do 50 Gs, baby, but – dude, my note on that too, same with the Talbot fight, is it's not close. Like, he's controlling this whole fight. Billy Q, it was weird. He was, I don't know. He looked timid, but sometimes you look timid against someone that just is better than you. The trips that Zalal was doing was so sweet too, dude. They were so nice. He just controlled Billy Q this whole time. And that's one of those, like, you know, Billy Q's no slouch. But that was one of the ones that you go back and you're like, wow, someone is just like this much better than me in this, and on this night. It was a big skill difference, what it looked like.
Yeah, and I want to know what was going on with Billy Q. Like, there had to be something, because he opened up as a pretty good favorite.
Yeah.
And people were throwing money at him early, you know, the bettors. And then all of a sudden something changed, and it went from him being like a minus 160 to a pick'em. And I think actually Zalal might have been the favorite by the time the fight started. So, and generally the betting world knows what's going on, right? Like, they tend to have a little bit of an inside scoop. There was the talk about Cejudo being injured going into his last fight, and then sure enough, he comes out afterwards. It's like, yeah, there was a little something going on there, you know, that so... Really curious as to what was going on there. There was a separate angle during the face-off, not the one from, like, out where the crowd would be, but from the woman that, like, holds the phone and records, which they have a new one now who does that.
Yeah.
But you could see it, like, Billy Q was kind of, like, favoring his arm. He had, like, kind of a weird posture, and it was like, oh, does he have an elbow injury? Does he have a shoulder injury? I don't know. That wasn't a typical performance from him, not to take anything away from Zalal, because we don't know. Was it just Zalal making Billy Q fight that way, right? Like, was it the person standing in front of him that led to him fighting that way? But he definitely, that wasn't the performance, I think, that we're used to seeing from a guy like that.
And Billy Q kind of brought that same posture into the fight too, right? Like, he kind of held that posture. But that's the downside, is like, okay, maybe he's injured, maybe he's not. But it's hard to take away from what Zalal did too. And whether someone's injured or not, if they're in the cage at that night, you still got to perform. And he performed. Mm-hmm. And then he exploded on the microphone. He made me a bigger fan because of how excited he was. And yeah, like you said, Factory X, we know what a great gym that is, a camp. And then you have that personality. It's like, you're going to go far, man. You know, if you can keep performing like this, you're going to go far. And I'm ready for his next one as well.
And positivity, genuine joy and appreciation goes a long way, right? Because he getting on the mic, he could have, you know, this dude was a scrub, like, you know, all this stuff, y'all talking about I'm an underdog. It could have been negative, but it was very much a just like, dude, I'm happy to be here. This is fucking sweet. That makes me a bigger fan of him than, like, if you're going to be negative, you better have those Conor McGregor type mic skills where like you can say some cold blooded shit and people believe you.
Yeah.
But like this, like that has to be who Zalal is, right? Like that is
100%.
It seems so authentic, so genuine, and that's what brings people in. And fucking good for him.
Yeah, like
love to see it.
Like he would be that type of guy that if you got him a Christmas present, he'd be just as excited. Like he just seems like he's yeah. just grateful. Yeah. And yeah, if he would have done the cold blooded shit, sure, it still might have gained him fans. I like what he said. And then even when they were like, you know, you're the first person to, oh, really on the, I saw him first. He's like,
yeah.
And then he like looks at his, like probably his jiu-jitsu coach and like his yeah. personality made his win was impressive. His personality made it be like, I like this kid, dude. I really mm-hmm. like this guy. So going forward, you know, this is a fight night. And when we talk about fight nights, these are prospect fights, lower ranked fighters, bring them along slowly. We're going to say this probably this whole card, right, for the most part, but yeah. bring him along slowly. And he didn't take damage. He could be back in there, you know, as long as he's willing to do a camp. He could be back there in 3 months, 4 months.
Yeah. 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 Get turning. And I'm sure for somebody like that, when you're riding the high, it's like, yo, let's go.
Yes.
Like, I already lost my opportunity once. Like, let's go. So yeah, hopefully we do see him back in there. Pretty quickly. A fight that turned on the absolute just drop of a hat, though, also in the featherweight division, was that Julian Arosa. I mean, I thought he was done for initially. Dude. He looked badly, badly hurt. But to have that recovery, I mean, it looked like he was getting out. It almost makes me a little more upset about how Padilla and Arosa finished when they fought. Just because Arosa was badly hurt, but here's a guy who can rebound, as we learned. And for him to cinch up the guillotine like that, that was the arm in. That's, I've said it before back when I was doing jiu-jitsu, like that was the thing that I was pretty decent at. And so just to see the technique was beautiful as he was, and they mentioned it on the broadcast, just as he was crunching up to make sure. It's different when the arm is not in. You can kind of lean back and arch on it
mm-hmm.
because you're right on the throat. When the arm's in, you have to like crunch into it. And so it was pretty cool, to just beautiful technique as he got that finish. And they talked about him being a first time dad. So you know, yeah, we're dad life on this podcast. So always cool to see that
dad life. But the weird thing about that fight was, yeah, Ramos hurts Arosa early, like super early. And then takes him down. And it's like, okay. But then when Arosa gets up, Ramos shoots in and takes him down again. And that's ultimately his demise. It's like, I'm not a fighter. I don't game plan. I don't have. But it's like, you're winning on the feet. You hurt him. Why are you going for the takedowns? And that's the ultimate thing that got you in the guillotine to lose. Mm-hmm. It was a pretty quick guillotine, too. It wasn't like Dustin Poirier could learn a thing or two, you know?
Yeah.
But it's just like, was it a low IQ? Is Arosa just that skill that it doesn't matter? But you imagine you want to test it on the feet. Once he gets up, you took him down. You didn't really do anything too much after you hurt somebody, and he gets on his feet. Why not test his shin out again? You know, like, why not just see what happens? You go for the takedown. You get submitted. Seems like a poor either game plan or loss of a game plan. But like I said, I don't know what it's like to be in there, so I don't know what happens in that.
And I think that is what kind of sets some of the better fighters apart, is because for all we know, Ramos's game plan was like, let's get this fight to the ground any way possible.
Exactly.
If we can hurt him, great. But like, that's where we think we can win this. And so in his mind, he's like, great, you know, this is going according to plan.
Fair.
Boom, cracked him, hurt him. Like, we're going, you know, we're getting this on the ground. And then that occurs. The great ones, like a John Jones, right? Those are the guys where they might do that and they're like, oh, this isn't on the ground what I thought it was. Like, let's see what happens on the feet again. And so that's, I think, where I would love to be able to talk to fighters afterwards and be like, so what was the game plan? Like,
yep.
How did you envision this fight going? Like, what was that? What were you guys anticipating? Obviously, at this point, not going to get that opportunity, but would be really cool to see, because then that's going to give you some insight on guys too, of like, oh, this is somebody who is dialed in and feels they have to follow the game plan, or this is somebody who has that like free flowing, I feel good you know, we have the game plan, but like, I'm also going to adapt as things go on, as opposed to waiting till the end of a round to be like, hey, you know, my coach is telling me this, now I'm going
to
do it.
Yeah. And great point to kind of talk about. Maybe the game plan is like, hey, we got to get this guy on his back, and he's doing it, right? But that's where I say, like, me not being a fighter, it's like, why don't you just stand it up? And it's like, that's not the game plan. And he might be at a point in his career where it's like, follow the game plan. Like, that's in his mind. Mm-hmm. There's a game plan, follow. So, I mean, doesn't matter. He lost. Hopefully he'll learn a lesson. They'll go back to the drawing board. But, man, just missed opportunity to hurt somebody and then let them recover, stand up, take him back down, guillotine, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And we mentioned Padilla with his Arosa fight. He looked amazing against Pajuelo. And it almost played out like what we were thinking, where Pajuelo did what he was going to do. He's just going to walk forward. And Padilla just did a phenomenal job with the counters, stopping him dead in his tracks, right? Went to the body, then up top with the straight left and just dropped him. I thought it was a beautiful transition as he was, you know, a lot of times we hear transition and we're thinking like these scrambles to, yes, you know, boom, take the back, hooks him. But no, it was more of a, like, as Pajuelo was working up, it was like, okay, like, I have this. I'm not going to rush it. Like, we're good. All right. Now that I'm where I need to be, I'm going to adjust the grip. And the standing darce, you don't really see.
I'm about to say, you see the power guillotine. Yeah.
Yeah. You see the power guillotine standing. You see guillotine standing, but you generally don't see a darce. And it was pretty cool to hear him explain it after the fact, where he was like, he was up against the cage, so it was basically like the ground.
Yep.
And, you know, when you're doing the darce, you want to try to hook the leg so they can't get away. And for him to, you know, basically, okay, his feet are planted, like, his back's against the cage, this might as well be on the ground. It was just cool to hear that thought process going on. And it was good to see him, you know, come back after kind of getting sunned a little bit in his last fight and just looking a little lethargic, a little like, you know, he was still riding the high from the Arosa win, and going back and rewatching that fight, it's like, oh, well, Arosa really wasn't finished. Mm-hmm. Like, it was a bad spot, but he wasn't finished. And then you go out and you lose this decision to a guy that, if you're the prospect we think you are, you shouldn't be losing to. It was nice to see him return with this kind of performance.
Yeah, and I mean, we can focus on the darts because, first of all, he tapped he tapped fast, right? Like, super fast. Mm-hmm. We could talk about that. But Padilla also hurt him, like, dropped him in the first and had crazy ground and pound. The elbows were disgusting. So, mm-hmm. like, we can focus on that aspect, too. Like, the thing that led up to Pajuelo standing up and getting darced is he was hurt. You know what I'm saying?
He was
tired of being on the ground. And, mm-hmm. like you said, and then everything else, how they describe it, how he can flow into that, catch it, get it quick. I mean, it's beautiful. It was fun to watch. Yeah, you feel good for the guy. It's just fun. Who do you think Padilla could be fighting next, man? Who would be?
Yeah, there's really fun ones at featherweight, and I think kind of a put up or shut up moment would be Pat Sabatini.
You right? Just want to see Pat Sabatini fight everyone.
Yeah, I do. I do. Yeah. But, like, Sabatini's at that point where he needs to – he's had some really big ups and downs, and he's shown when he's been given the opportunity against the best guys, he can't get it done. You know, they put him in there with – he was coming off of a good win. Like, okay, you get Diego Lopez and on a big card, and Lopez just made quick work of him.
Yep.
And so now it's like, okay, you are at that point in your career where – less established prospects. We're going to put you in there with some younger guys now and see if you can do it. And I think for Padilla, what a great matchup, right? Like, you can, a guy that's very highly respected in Pat Sabatini, you get that name on your resume. Now you're knocking on the door of the top 15. Might that be a little too soon for him? You know, maybe. But I think if you're continuing to try to build Mexican stars, he's one. I think you could also potentially run back the Arosa fight just because of the way it ended controversially, and then with Arosa showing like, hey, guys, you got to put me out for a fight to be over.
Absolutely. And a guy you were highlighting last week, Steven Nguyen, this fight was awesome.
Yeah.
Back and forth. They both hurt each other. Leg kicks. come on, dude.
Yeah.
But even with Aaron's, you know, kind of, I felt like he was jabbing him to death, kind of getting the, but he gets blasted. They both blast each other with leg kicks. They both knock each other down. Aaron's beat his ass, but Stephen Wynn had a great performance. That fight was awesome. That was such like that was one of those fights that, like, you know, sometimes you might be watching the fights doing something else. Maybe you pull out your phone or some shit, but you're like, this shit is good, man. This
dialed
was just,
in.
It was just a fun fight.
Yeah. I mean, one fight of the night for a reason.
Yeah.
Right. I thought the commentary was a little biased, though. They if you weren't watching the fight and you were just listening, you would think that Aaron's was, like, unscathed, just beating the fuck out of him. And, like, that really wasn't the fight. I thought that Stephen Wynn had a really good second round. He started riding the jab a little bit more.
He knocked him down in the second round. Yeah, like, he put him down, like, late in the second round.
Yeah, I thought it was more competitive than they were making it sound like with the commentary. Great win for Aaron's. He showed a lot of resiliency because he was getting hit. His face was busted up pretty good.
Yep.
And for him to eventually, I don't want to say broke Stephen Wynn, but was picking him apart. By the end of it, it was like a clear, he's starting to separate himself.
Correct.
But those are the fights that why it's hard to say a card is shitty on paper.
Yep.
Because, like, Jarno Ahrens, who hadn't won a UFC fight, and Stephen Wynn coming off the Contender Series and, you know, hadn't fought in forever, waiting to get into the UFC, like, all these things. And then they go and put on a fucking barn burner of a fight. And that's why it's such a beautiful sport, man. You never know what you're going to get, whether it's somebody getting bitten or it is the...
We never have to say that shit again, man.
Or, you know, like the come from behind guillotine for Rosa or something like this, where it's just two guys that are never going to contend for a title or anything, but just putting it all on the line and having a phenomenal fight. So, yeah, really fun to watch. We'll watch both of those guys again moving forward. One thing I do have to bring up, and I truly don't understand, why do heavyweights that have big time knockout power not learn to defensively wrestle?
Dog, it's all it would take, right? First of all, one thing that I thought about this fight was, like, Toffa's gonna knock him. It just felt like Toffa's gonna, like, he was hurting him. He's gonna get the knockout. To not get it, I was actually shocked. I thought Williams was gonna win the fight. Like, just looking at the matchup, watching, like, doing the research on it, I was like, I think Williams.
Yeah. You got the pick right. We got it.
But once Toffa landed on him, I'm like, God, I always forget. This is heavyweights, and, like, Toffa has that power. But to your point, just learn how to fucking get up. And actually, maybe the third round, but him getting taken down in the first round and second round, it didn't look like Toffa was giving up the takedown to me. Maybe the third round, I can't really remember. I just remember being like, yo, Williams is going to be out. They're got to be tired at this point. He's still throwing, like, bombs. And then he got taken down again. I'm like, dude, you win this fight if you just stand up, right? Like, Williams looked like, I don't want to get touched by this guy ever again in my life.
Yeah.
but yeah, just.
Yeah, it was, you would think after Toffa got taken down in the first round throwing a kick and couldn't get back up, that when he had Williams badly hurt in round two, he wouldn't throw a knee. Like, hey, push away and keep throwing hands because he's very close to being unconscious.
Yeah.
And yeah, same, you know, throw the knee, get taken down, can't get back up. And third round, it was, I just didn't get it. There was no, now granted, I am 5'8", and when I was doing jujitsu, I was like 150 pounds. So, you know, not a big person.
You're lightweight. It'd
be very different with it. Yeah. with a, you know, 250 on you.
Yeah.
But there was no, when it, like, half guard, it was not a smothering half guard by Williams by any means.
Yeah.
There was space. Toffa's not trying to get the underhook. He's not working to a hip. You know, he just seemed content to sit there.
Yeah.
And I don't understand that. You would think if you were a heavyweight, that had that one punch knockout power, you don't even really got to learn to sprawl.
No.
You know, like, learn the cage work. Do what Izzy did, right? Like, learn how to stand back up, how to make sure that when it hits the ground, you're not taking damage, and just work on that. Because, yeah, if Taffa could have sprawled, if he could have stood up quickly, any of those things, he's knocking Williams out.
Easy.
I mean, there was a very big disparity on the feet.
Yeah.
And, you know, we see it with Tuivasa. I mean, even Derek Lewis, his stand-ups were just him being big and strong.
Yep.
Right? Like, he never really learned technical stand-ups. And so, not being at a large person, I don't know what that feels like, how much more difficult it is. But we have seen guys that might not have a well-rounded skill set but can grapple at heavyweight go a long way.
Yeah.
And so if you have one punch power and it's like, yeah, I'm gonna chuck Liddell this, right? I'm just gonna make sure that people can't take me down, and if they can, I can get back up because I like my chances when we're throwing hands.
Yep. Go ahead.
I'm just gonna say, and I love Carl Williams' call out afterwards, because he said Stipe Miocic, and I was like, really, really, like, you're calling out Stipe, but then do a barbecue contest. I was like, all right, I love that, man. Like, that, because in doing that, like, you know now that's going to happen, yeah. Right? Like, because of kind of the twist of calling out Stipe, but it was for barbecue, it's going to be on the internet, and now he's going to get the charity work that, you know, that he was looking for. So love that.
And I'm going to pivot in a moment, but I do want to talk about how you felt. Because at first, when Taffa hits him with a legal kick, you know, he's down, clearly kicks him in the face, can't do that. And it didn't stop. At first, I was like, oh, they should stop. But then I didn't have a problem with it. I was like, you know what? Herb Dean's assessing the situation. He doesn't feel like the fighter's hurt, and he's in an advantageous position. Because imagine if they stand that up, then Carl Williams is in the position to get knocked out. I actually didn't mind it when I thought about it in between rounds. I was like, you know, Carl Williams probably won this round, and Herb Dean was a factor in that by not stopping it, not letting Taffa even, because let's say they even reset to that position, Taffa gets a little bit of rest, right? And then maybe has just enough explosion to get up. I didn't mind it, but it was kind of like, God, you got to stop that. I mean, it's illegal. He kicked the shit out of him, right? It didn't hurt him, but he kicked him in the face. And Taffa even realized, like, oh, shit, my bad. So what did you think about the not stopping the clear foul?
Yeah, it was interesting because I think that I think it was a good assessment by Herb Dean to look at it and be like, oh, he doesn't seem rocked or hurt. Yeah. So, like, we're not going to take a point, because at that time, it's either stand him up, take a point, and now they're standing because you don't return them to the position.
Sure.
Tap him on the shoulders and stop it and be like, hey, are you okay? Here's your warning.
Yep.
Boom, go again. Or kind of what he did. And I think probably in ref school, they would tell you to do the second one, where it's like, hey, pause it to make sure Williams is okay.
Yep.
But ultimately, I think it played out in a way where it would have been a bad thing if they took a point and stood it up for Williams, even though you're getting that point because – like, the only danger you're in is when you're having to stand with this guy. So the end result was good. I probably would have liked to see him look and like, hey, hold on a second. Like, Carl, you with me? Like, or, you know, but at the end of the day, it was fine. And, you know, Williams was like, no, it's all good.
Yeah.
to Taffa when they're on the ground. So yeah, I'm glad that didn't play into it. And then to go back to the biting real quick, the way Tognoni broke that up was really weird too. He was, now that we're talking about ref, he was just like, time. He didn't touch the fighters. It took like five seconds of him just yelling time before he put his hands on them. So much so that Felder was like, you gotta touch
the fighters. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Yeah, I forgot about that because he was yelling strange. Time. But like,
he's probably just shocked.
But especially it's not his first language, you know? So it's like,
I mean, it's Tognoni's first language.
I'm talking about the fighter, you know. Yeah. So it's like he might not be listening. So like you got to touch the fighter because it's like something external is happening. So you can't blame him for not doing that. But
I'm blaming Tognoni for not.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You can't blame the fighter for not stopping. Yeah. You got to put the responsibility on Tognoni being like, yes. I can't just say time. I have to touch the fighters and let them know this is a break in the action. I agree with you 100%.
He was shocked.
Yeah. I do want to pivot a little bit. Did you see the video of Tom Aspinall beating John Jones? Just because we're talking about heavyweights.
Beating John Jones?
Meeting John Jones.
Oh, where he tried to like alpha him and put his hand on his shoulder and
I love John Jones is like that no. version of John Jones though. I was like, this is the type of thing to me that gets me excited because that's the type of shit to me that John Jones goes, oh, I want to fuck this kid up, right? Mm-hmm. And this will bring him back. But I don't know if it was an alpha thing. I just think, you know, Tom Aspinall, like these big guys, that's what they do. I'm not saying he didn't, but these big guys, you know, sometimes you're in people's spaces because you're just always that guy. Mm-hmm. But I loved to see John Jones be John Jones for a minute, even though like he wasn't really talking shit. He just had that demeanor of like, you're not badder than me. And it made me excited to be like, after John Jones comes back and fights Stipe, will he be like, I'm going to fuck this one kid up? It made me excited.
I think on Aspinall's part, it is a power move. It's like, I'm dictating this situation and it's even more of a power move because he's not like an outwardly aggressive person other than, you know, being one of the baddest men on the planet and fucking people up for a living. But, you know, he's just this jovial, like happy guy and it's meant as like a friendly thing, but also it's like, I'm sizing you up. I'm like, I am invading your space and, you know, because it's friendly, it's kind of like, you know, what do I do here? And almost allowing him to do it. I think there's a lot of psychological stuff that goes into Aspinall doing that.
I don't disagree because everything's a mind game, right? And Aspinall knows he wants that fight. John Jones doesn't need that fight. Aspinall wants it for his legacy, for his career, to say I'm the baddest motherfucker. But that
belt is going to be on the line in a couple weeks.
Yeah, sorry, second baddest. But for him to do that, but then be like, it'd be an honor to fight you, it kind of takes away that out. Because, like, you know, it's like, but I just love to see it in John Jones' eyes where it was like, no. I was so excited to maybe see that fight. But anyways, back to the card. It was a little.
Well, before we get back to the card, take this time to go over to X at @number1BSPod. Give us a follow so you see the fight picks. It all comes down to next week. Basically, I think I'm in a 4-fight hole right now, so I'm gonna need to pick just basically opposite DJ.
I think
on everything.
It's 5.
Was it 5?
I think so.
Because I think you picked up 1 on this because we were 3 different. So you picked up 1.
Two. Picked up 2.
No.
Yeah, because didn't you pick?
You got the
follow us and then we'll talk.
So follow at @number1BSPod for the fight picks, the featured prelim poll, and then we have episodes dropping Mondays, Wednesdays, F updates on Friday. So also make sure that you are subscribing, liking, following, whatever it is on your podcast listening service of choice. Oh yeah, and on X, follow at @YFFJared for links to all the stuff I'm doing over there on Fansided.
Do it. And since you're a jabroni, you picked Simon.
I did.
And Taffa. I picked Talbot and Williams. And then,
but you being the jabroni that you are, also picked Billy Q.
That's right. I picked Billy Q. Yeah, I was trying to look at the things. I'm like, yeah. So you're right.
Learn to do math.
I don't do math.
Come on. Yeah, it's the simple addition and subtraction. Yeah. I just work with computers.
And are we gonna talk about you giving someone pretty good advice on a fight to pick, and they didn't choose the outcome of a fight?
Shabazian, my man, the golden boy. My brother was asking, and we're very infrequently gonna dive into any kind of gambling stuff here, but my brother was asking for a pick on that, and he had the option for a Shabazian by finish in round 1 or 2 at plus money, and I was like, yeah, dude. Do that because it's either that or a Dobson decision. And he didn't. Come on, Josh. Hashtag be better. But good performance by Shabazian. I was impressed with him getting hurt and battling back because we talked about it a little bit last week. And there was a lot of questions for Shabazian going into this fight. We didn't get an answer to the gas tank. We didn't get an answer to the grappling. What we did get an answer to, though, is he wanted to be in there.
Yep.
We talked about it, that there was times where it seemed like he wasn't ever going to give up on himself, But if there was a path out, he was going to accept the fight as it was.
Sure.
And he was hurt badly in this fight. And for him to battle back and do what he did, his ability to turn it on when somebody gets hurt is very, very impressive. And he's even said it afterwards. He's like, when I see somebody hurt, like, I'm a finisher. And he is. Like, it is a sprint to the finish when he sees you hurt. Now, that can bite you against these guys that are really difficult to put away, like a Fluffy Hernandez. Sure. You know, like, that's, you know, that's a problem. We saw it. But with somebody like this, where he was able to go in and just get him out of there, it was impressive. It gets you excited to watch Shabazzian again.
Yeah, absolutely. And like you're saying, he hurt him, but then to hurt him back, and then the difference, you saw it live. Dobson hurt, Shabazzian couldn't finish him. As soon as mm-hmm. Shabazzian hurt him, great performance. We know who Shabazzian is. We talked about him last week. We know where he's going to be in his career. He's never going to be a champion, unfortunately. I mean, that's rude to say, but you know. But it was just a nice performance to see adversity. When you see people with adversity and then they still have it in them, it's mm-hmm. exciting. You know, Shabazzian's always exciting. It's just, like you said, we don't know some of the things. When you finish someone in the first round, you don't get questions answered. But you finish in the first round, I don't have to answer your questions. You know,
yeah, exactly. Like, fuck it, dude. Yeah. Yeah, throw your answer away because yeah. I got one of my own.
Yeah.
I like the switch to Extreme Couture. I like that he's having to get rounds every day with a guy like Strickland, a guy like Curtis, where you have to want to be there all the time.
Yep.
Because there's going to be days you don't want to, and you have a wild man of a former champion in your face fighting you. Not sparring you, fighting.
Yeah.
And and so I like that for Shabazzian, and I think it showed in this fight. Now, one of the things that made me laugh was afterwards they picked up on the mic at Dobson going, "You're only 26 years old? God damn." But I think, like, that's as funny as that is, it's also a very valid point. Now that he just got this great win, cool. Let him fight another guy like Dobson.
Yeah.
You know, let him fight another guy. He could fight either one of the guys that's going to be in the matchup between Petrosky and Malkoon. You know, winner or loser, like, he can fight out. Like, that's who Shabazzian needs to be fighting. It doesn't need to be like, okay, cool, go fight Roman Kopylov, or cool, you get to go fight Joe Pyfer.
Yeah,
like,
relax.
Yeah. And because he was, I think, number 11 or number 10, like, he was highly ranked way too early in his career. Like, let's slow it down. Let's let him string together 4 or 5 wins before we're talking
about. Why not?
Yeah.
Yeah, 26.
It's always nice to see. Yeah, it's always nice to see somebody come back like that from adversity. Yeah. And now, our main event. I want to hear your thoughts. Because I know you are a huge, huge Thug Rose fan.
It's like the Thug Rose. It's okay, great fight, right? Like, competitive. But watching these two women again, like, I hate to do this because it's not fair. Not everybody's should be in the, like, looks for, but they don't look like title contenders right now. But Thug Rose just doesn't look like she has that fucking, like, that killer in her sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, she didn't look timid. She was definitely, she's slick. Like, her fighting style is just fun because it's weird because, you know, she's small just because she's a small, like, person.
Mm-hmm.
But man, like, when she throws, like, those little uppercuts, and it's like she got go-go gadget arms. Sometimes it just seems are. But Amanda Hibas, dog. We knew she was going to be a dog. We knew she was going to be forward. She has some spinning shit that was nice. She gets marked up pretty well, though. Yeah. Huh? Like, she
yeah, Rose does too, though.
Yeah, but, like, I didn't see anything of too consequence. You see her at the end of the fight, you're like, God damn, she gets beat up. Which, mm-hmm. on the flip side, have you seen Cheeto's face after, like, 5 days after the fight? He looks normal.
He's Wolverine.
Dude, that's exactly the comment I saw was, this guy's Wolverine. Yeah. It's like,
unbelievable.
Anyways, the fight was good. What I felt like live, I felt like Rose won 1, 4, and 5 for sure, possibly 2. And Hibas clearly won 3. And then, mm-hmm. looking at the scorecards, I'm like, okay, they did 2. But you texted me last night, and you had me second-guessing myself. And I was like, am I watching the same? Like, am I just being biased? And I had to really check my bias. Rewatched it again this morning. the thing rewatching it this morning, I was watching it to trying to catch the rounds, but I was like, God, Rose just doesn't seem like she has that killer in her sometimes. And last night, rewatching the fight this morning, I'm like, another 25 minutes of me not seeing a killer in her. And it sucks because I think she's going to need that to be a champion in this division.
Yeah, there's too many of them. Yes. Too many killers in this division. The reason I had texted you that last night was, one, going into the fifth round, Hebus was like plus 400 or something, which was wild to me because I thought, you know, one for Rose, three for Hebus.
Easy.
And I thought two and four were really close. They talk about control time. But Rose was literally doing nothing with the control. There was some pitter patter, and Hebus was delivering damage from the bottom. And so that's why I felt, though I thought Rose was going to get the win, it was like, in my mind, those rounds were too close. And we've seen some nights the judges are okay with, you know, kind of pushing control aside if there's some impactful stuff going on.
Correct.
And it wasn't super impactful, and so that's why it was a little wishy-washy. But it was like, okay, this is for, you know, plus 400 money. Like, throw, you know, it's worth it because all it's going to take is the judges in a very two very, very close rounds going, you know, we thought Hebus was actually trying to finish the fight,
yeah,
whereas Rose was trying to win the fight, as weird as that sounds. Like, Rose has kind of turned into a point fighter a bit.
Yep.
And you hear it in the cornering from Pat Barry of, like, you know, he kept saying dribble on her, so I don't know what that means, but it seemed like he was very content with, like, yeah, touch, we don't need to do more, you know, touch, don't get hit. And so that's not providing a lot of margin for error. And so I don't think this was like a bad decision by any means, but it's like, oh, if in my eyes, it could very easily be 3-1 Hebus going into round five.
Sure.
Because I thought Rose very clearly won round five, but there was some weird shit going on. Like, looking at media members online, there was one guy who was like, oh, you know, I have it 30-27 Hebus. This is turning into a masterclass or something along those lines. And I was like, what fight are you watching?
Yeah, because round one was Rose. Round three, clearly Hebus. I mean, Hebus did her work in that. So yeah. even if you're saying 2-1 at that point, I wouldn't disagree. I think on the judges' scorecards, one judge, Saudi Amato, gave Hebus the second round. But yeah, when you watch something live, sometimes you're not watching to score, you're watching to enjoy, you know? So, like, when you're watching it, you're like, sometimes you know when a fighter's winning, and when it's close, you have to rewatch.
Yeah.
But just rewatching Rose, and first of all, Hebus is always going to be in that middle of the grain, unfortunately, because she is a dog, and she's going to win fights because she's going to outpace somebody. And
yeah, she's going to be more aggressive.
Yes. And yep. And if you want to make it to that next level, to where you're trying to go for a belt, you're going to have to be someone that's like, someone's in your face all the goddamn time, and it's annoying, and you're tired, and she just doesn't seem to get tired. We saw it last night, 25 minutes. She doesn't get tired. She's props to her. I give her all the props. UFC is not going to diminish her value after this fight, right? Especially because... Go ahead.
I was going to say, she needs to fight strawweight.
Sure.
She needs to fight strawweight.
Sure. But also, I don't disagree, but also, it's just like her value, I don't think it should go down because she's game, and even after the fight, she's like, you know, respectful and all that shit, good personality. But for Rose, there's a push for her to be that person, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you're not a champion fighting this way in this division, so what do you do with Rose? You know, what do you do with her where, yeah, you're going to be better than most fighters in here, but... We already saw it. She didn't beat Manon Fiore. Do you see her fighting the way that she did last night? Do you see her beating? Really? Like, really, even? Man, I'm trying to look to see. Because, first of all, I guess we got to talk about where she's going to be ranked at. You know, because Hebus is 8 in the flyweight. Does Rose break into the top 8?
I mean, I think she will based on name recognition. They were really trying to, like, on the post-broadcast stuff, really trying to, like, And so now Rose is in title talks, and it's like, no, she's not.
But
like,
that's what I'm saying. Like, they're pushing her, and her performances aren't. I don't
aren't there.
I don't like. Could she beat Caitlyn?
Yeah.
I can't.
Sermonara.
Yeah.
Yes, that is, because that's going to be a point fight.
Exactly.
So yes, I think she could beat Caitlyn Sermonara. Now looking at it, does she beat Macy Barber? I don't think so. That's the fight that everyone's calling for. But like this version of not aggressive Rose, I think Barber turns that into a dirty fight, and I think Barber wears on her. There's more clinch work. I think Barber is more dangerous than Hivas. We saw it in their fight,
of course.
So yeah, like that's. I don't think she beats her. We know she's not beating Fiore. And granted, there was the broken pinky first fight up at flyweight, and Rose did look bigger. I went back and rewatched the Fiore Rose fight just today, actually getting prepping for next week. And it was startling to see Rose last night and then today. Like, oh, she definitely added weight, like legitimate real size.
Correct.
For this fight. But I just, I don't think she's beating Blanchfield. I don't think she's beating Shevchenko. I don't think she's beating Grasso. What I want to see, though, is somebody that's slightly more skilled than Hivas. No disrespect to Hivas.
Yeah.
But somebody that's slightly more skilled, that manages distance better, that has better footwork, and is going to turn it into a dirty fight. And so I think Natalia Silva is somebody that, you know, might not be, she'll point fight a little bit too, but I think she has better footwork than Hivas. I think that she's somebody that is a Manon Fiore type fighter. Yep. And so it's like, okay, it's almost a way of running that back and also allowing Silva to then get her name on the map if she can beat Thug Rose.
Fair.
The other one is we have that fight coming up between Karini Silva and Ariane Lipsky.
Mm-hmm.
I think the winner of that fight would be good. I'm anticipating that being, spoilers, anticipating that being Karini Silva, but it could be Lipsky. But Karini Silva is somebody that is going to bring the fight to you and make it dirty. And so, like, let's see Rose pass that test, because really the time she passed that test was Andrade.
Yep.
You know, and it's a different world. Up there at 125, and I know Andrade has fought all the way up to 135, but she is a straw weight, like, let's be real. And somebody like Karini Silva is massive. That's the one that I would personally really like to see. If they want her to move up, then Macy Barber would be the fight. I definitely don't think it should be the winner or loser of those top four of the Grasso, Shevchenko, Fiore, Blanchfield. I think she is sitting outside of that for sure.
I agree. I can see her doing the Sermonara fight. I can see her doing the Macy Barber. But the problem is with Rose, and I think the commentators kind of showed that last night, showed their bias toward it, and this is going to be a fan bias statement that I'm making, is that Rose with a dog, I can see her competing. I just don't see that dog in her no more. I don't see that I don't see that killer, like that Joanna, where I'm coming and I'm fucking you up. So hopefully we do see that and you know, because her skill set is still solid. I mean, her movement last night was slick, but like you pointed out, you have to have that for those women up top. Shevchenko's not going to let up. Grasso's not going to let up. We've seen that. I mean, I know they're going to fight again, but Blanchfield. I mean, Blanchfield's mean. She's just mean, and she's at that point of her career where she's still mean. You know, like
she's hungry.
Yeah, maybe there you go. Maybe that's a better word. So yeah, I mean, good fight, but you hear the commentators talking about title, and you're like, no. Yeah. She's three fights away from that talk, three wins away.
Yeah, I mean, I think maybe two. I think fighting down. I guess it's not really fighting down because we don't know where she's going to be.
Exactly.
I think a win over a Silva, either one or Lipsky. You know, I think that win, and then a. Yeah, you're right. Probably three.
Probably
because then another five, and then a number one contender. Yeah, yeah. Because, unless she does some like great shit in those two wins, and it's like, all right, you know, we're out of contenders. But
KO,
I don't see them
like
being
stopping people and looking like a killer. But
yeah, I just don't see them being out of contenders at flyweight is the thing, because that is the best division in women's MMA, and I don't want this to sound like it's, you know, bashing Rose, because like my notes during it was she's levels better than Hebus. Like, she's far more skilled. You could see it every time Hebus was going for takedowns. I mean, the positions were immediately reversed, or Rose was standing back up. Yep. The footwork, I mean, everything. Rose is supremely, supremely skilled. But there's long stretches where, whole fights, where it seems like she does not have any intent to damage her opponent.
Well, and to be fair, to kind of jump on that statement as well, it's, I agree. We're not shitting on her by saying that she doesn't have that killer, but it's like, you know, you watch another fighter, I don't know, like a Wonder Boy, and you're like, God, I would love to see him fight these top people, but he's just not there. He's just not doing it, right? Like, and this is,
yes,
even when you saw him, like, doing what he does, like, he's just not there to fight. And then, you know, he got his title shot against Woodley and whatever, but yeah, it's not any disrespect to her. It's just what we see, and I would love to see Rose go out there and just starch people, but if she's not doing it, then we got to go based on the performances that she's had.
Yeah. And looking ahead, we did have some intriguing announcements, shall we say, this week. We asked for it because he barely ever fights. Alex Perez, after coming off that loss to Makhachev, he has a fight scheduled already. Awesome. And it's a good fight.
Yeah.
That is scheduled for June 15th. So there's a lot of time where something could happen.
Yeah. You shut
but
your mouth.
taking on number 12, Tagir Ulanbekov. So that is, you know, no easy fight for Perez. I thought he looked good in his last fight against Makhachev, but I also think Tagir in going to kind of, just grapple and try to get the win towards the end. Like, I think that's a dangerous fight for Perez, but it's also really going to tell us about where he's at. You know, is Makhachev just that good, or is Perez starting to fade a little bit?
Yep.
And then the St. Louis card taking place, I believe it's May 11th, which is, so first of all, St. Louis card. So, you know, the man who has the St. Louis arch tattooed on him, the Slender Man himself, Sean Woodson, was going to be on this card, and he is taking on the 15th ranked featherweight Bruce Leroy. So that is going
to
be a fun one.
Always fun.
Very excited.
Bruce Leroy, yeah.
Yeah, he's just entertaining, and Sean Woodson has a very, like, visually appealing striking style, great body work. I mean, I think that's going to be just absolute fun fight. And then I still contend that we should be getting our cut on some of these matches that are being made. Pretty sure Mick and Sean are listening to the pod on a regular basis, because after Robles Despain had his win, you chuckled when I presented the name that I thought he should fight. You might laugh, sir, but Mick and Sean said, Jared, that's a great idea. We're going to book it on that card. He will be taking on Salsa Boy Waldo Cortez Acosta. Yeah, that's gonna be a fun one, because we know Acosta's tough. He could take a shot. He also carries that power. He can, you know, fight for more than 18 seconds. So really interested to see that. Yeah. If Despain goes in there and puts him away quickly, you know, then it's like, okay, let's talk about
title shot.
Let's talk about top 15 matchup for him then at that point. But that's a very, very exciting matchup. And then on the April 27th card, headlined by the rematch between Mono Cop and Mateusz Nicolau. Now, Ryan Spann and Anthony Smith have had some bad blood between them. But Anthony Smith kind of put an end to that. So instead of Anthony Smith, he's getting Anthony Smith off. Yeah. Bogdan Gushkov, Ryan Spann. That's going to be a good one. That is, it'll be fun for as long as it lasts, because, you know, Gushkov is a bit of a glass cannon. Like, he'll go out there and starch you, but he'll also get starched himself. So that should just
scary
be
fight for Gushkov too.
Yeah, I mean, Spann is a big, strong person. Yeah, I mean, like, we saw what he did to Dominic Reyes, right?
Exactly.
Like, that's going to be, I say we don't talk betting much, but this is, feels like we're doing a lot on this episode. But bet the under.
Yeah.
That is going to be fireworks for as long as it lasts.
Bet the under for Robles Despain. Bet the under. What, even if they say 6 seconds?
A half
bet
round.
Bet the under. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Should be. But that Spann Gushkov fight, I was pretty excited when I saw that one, because it It's light heavyweight. Neither one of these guys is going to contend for a title, so let's just see some entertaining fights.
Yep.
Anything else on your end?
No more biting.
No more. Yeah, yeah. Don't bite. As I've, you know, my 3-year-old has learned that. You know, we shouldn't bite. Do better, Severino. And still a pretty badass move for Lima to go out and get the tattoo on it. Appreciate y'all for listening. Love and respect.
Later.